It's episode 547 of the Roadman Cycling Podcast. Today I'm chatting with Clipped In and Free, Elena Yeager. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. If you tuned into yesterday's show, you'll realise I am back on the road again. Badlands did not go as planned. A mechanical early in Badlands took me out of the race, and what was meant to be my epic end-of-season adventure just in one moment came crumbling down around me. So from the dust of that, I've resurrected what we're calling the Chamois Time Tour Spain. And who knows, maybe this'll go and become Chamois Time Tour France, Italy, Colombia in the years to come. So this is our first ever Chamois Time Tour. So it's myself and Aaron Kearney are setting off, and we're trying to go from Granada to Biarritz in 5 days. And that's just over 1,000 kilometers. And then from Biarritz into Girona in another 5 days, which is across the mountains, which is going to be an epic two-part voyage, and I can't wait for it. So I can think of no more fitting of a guest today than Clipped In and Free, Elena Yeager. If you're not on social media, Elena is a total social media sensation. She is a videographer, she's a photographer, she's a cyclist, but more importantly, she is a storyteller. And I love this idea of this new world of cycling, where for a long time, cycling, making it in cycling, meant only one thing. It meant graduation to the World Tour. And that was the only way we could take what we love, cycling. It's our common passion. It's the only way we could take that and make it into a career. Now, I know at times I'm conflicted about social media. Is it a net positive or is it net negative? But I'm uplifted and inspired when I see stories like Elena's. Because she's taking social media and she's using it as a vessel for her storytelling. She's using it as a vehicle to inspire others to have a more adventurous life, a life just packed of fun, packed of excitement, and packed of new challenges. And that's what today's interview is about. And I hope it inspires you to have your own mini adventure, as I'm having at the moment, or as Elena packs in across all her social channels. I'm going to link them all in today's show notes down below. Her Instagram and YouTube channel are definitely worth checking out. So without further ado, let me please welcome to the Roadman Cycling Podcast, it's Clipped In and Free, Elena Yeager. Elena, welcome to the Roadman Cycling Podcast.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm super well. It's another sunny day in Girona, and I love seeing the sun every morning.
I've a bit of a history with Girona as well. Girona's probably the place I've visited most in the entire world. I've been back to Girona probably twice a year for the last 10 years. But I went out there first in 2011. An old training partner of mine was riding for Team Sky, and he was based in Girona. And he said to me, like, you got to get out and check out Girona. And it was this small little Catalonian town with only maybe 10, 15 cyclists in the town, yeah. And basically no cycling tourists, and it was this quaint little village that nobody knew about. And even getting there was like a trek, because like I didn't have the contacts for like local cars and stuff, so you had to do that train journey with the change in the train, and it was messy. I felt like I was going into the middle of nowhere the first time I went there. And now if I fast forward like 10 years, it's 11 years, 12 years, whatever it is, my maths is real bad, it's totally changed. It's like the cycling mecca of the world almost. What's it like to live there?
Yeah, it really is a cycling mecca of the world. Well, it's a dream for me. I first came here in 2018 and I actually wanted to move here. And then life happened in Germany. I met my ex-boyfriend and I stayed in Germany. And when we broke up, I finally made the move. And like within 3 days, I decided, okay, I got to move to Spain, and I was looking forward to leaving my country the whole time. And it made me so happy. It really was the best decision of my life. Just by the way, my ex-boyfriend and me, we're still really good friends and we're happy and it's all fine. And yeah, Girona gave me the possibility to feel like I belong somewhere, because I grew up without identifying with my cultural identity. As
You're German?
Yeah, I'm German, exactly. And
got that from the accents, the kind of bad World War II movies I've watched.
No! Oh, that's bad. I really try to hide that. Anyways, yeah, I can really identify with the culture. Everything is quite straight, sticking to rules a little bit. Like, it's not very unconventional, and I've always taken the unconventional path, and I'm a very emotional person. I laugh very loud. This is one of the first Spanish sentences that I learned here. Mi risa es muy alta means my laugh is very loud. It's very useful for me to be able to say this. And yeah, now I finally feel like I found my people, and I found people who live a similar life as I do. And I've also realized that everybody who got here, we're kind of similar. Like, you have to be a certain kind of person to leave your country and to live in this small Spanish town. And so I feel like really understood, and I feel like I can understand the people, and also to be surrounded by cyclists. If your life is so much about cycling as it is for me, not because I'm a professional cyclist, but my career is built on cycling, and also it's my biggest passion. So it's a huge part of my life, and I feel that now I can live it more than ever.
It's a weird time in cycling history, and I've talked about this on the podcast too. I chat with a lot of World Tour guys on the podcast, and there's like an insecurity that goes with World Tour because you always only have a couple of years contract. And I've talked to guys who've been professional at the highest level of sport for 10, 15 years, ridden so many Grand Tours, but yet they're afraid to buy a new sofa in Girona or wherever they live because it's such a transient experience. But there's so many different ways to, you know, quote unquote, make it in cycling now. It used to be you had to go to France, you had to get a continental contract, then you step up to World Tour, and then you move into that insecurity cycle around World Tour. But now you can make cycling a huge part of your life, and you can be a content creator on Instagram, you can be a YouTuber, you can do after dinner speaking, you can even have a microphone and start a podcast. You know, there's so many different ways to be a full-time in the cycling industry without needing to have those World Tour legs. And I think so many of those people have gravitated to Girona as well as just straight out cyclists. And that's what makes it an interesting melting pot for cycling at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. I love the changes that have been going on, and that I can actually, I'm really happy that I can build a career without necessarily being the best cyclist in the world. So, I still have to ride a lot, and I have to be fit to be able to do all these adventures that I want to do. And my ultimate goal is to suffer less while doing these adventures. As a lot of my friends, they're professional athletes. So I try to train with them, or like I do bike pegging projects with them. So I got to be able to at least stick to the wheel, like finish the trip and challenge myself. So yeah, I definitely aim to be like a good cyclist, but I don't have the pressure of having to win races or anything. And I'm really thankful that I don't have this. I have a different kind of pressure with the content creation, as there's much more to it as most people think. But yeah, I feel really precious to be able to do what I do, and I freaking love my job.
I had a flick through your content before I got on, and it seems like you're pretty consistent. Like, you don't really have long periods of time where you don't post anything. And it's something I'm struggling a little bit with the podcast at the moment, whether I should like call time and say, okay, this is the end of a season. Now, it will be a very long season because we're on episode 500 and something. But I'm wondering at some point, because I'm 6 days a week on the podcast, so we do two interviews on Tuesday and Thursday, and then the rest are solo casts for a week. Creativity for me has seasons, just the way that we experience seasons like summer and winter. And sometimes I feel like I need to go more into myself and more introspective and more quiet and have more experiences so I can create more content and have that sort of outward manifestation that people actually see. Do you find that pressure on the kind of content creation roller coaster to be a problem, or are you happy to churn out stuff like every day?
Wait, I don't know. You mean if it's hard for me to create a variety of content and like to stick to different kind of topics and to keep it interesting?
Yeah, exactly. Because content creation, I guess it's something that's quite creative. It's something that's quite liberating. It's something that's quite free. But then balancing against that, you have this sort of rigidity of having to create something every day. So it's like almost the counterpoint of these two things. Does the idea of having to create it every day actually defeat the essence of what makes it beautiful in the first place?
Yeah. So There definitely is pressure to create content and to give, like, to tell interesting stories. So it's like both a blessing and a curse. I got to make my life interesting and do interesting things to be able to talk about interesting things. But at the same time, that is super cool. So I'm like, I have to go on these adventures to be able to tell the story or to be able to create interesting content. And it's not me going out for the same loop every day. So I can't do that and still tell interesting stories. So yeah, sometimes I struggle a bit. Like if you have injuries, like I broke my collarbone at about this time last year. So I wasn't able to create content the way I used to.
How'd you break your collarbone?
It's super embarrassing, actually. I wish I could tell like a heroic story about how I broke my collarbone. But actually, I was living in Barcelona for 2 months. So I joined a group of cyclists, Spanish cyclists, and I'm German, and like the group rides in Germany, they're very, very well structured. Like we communicate a lot. And in Spain, that's a little different. So there's not that much communication going on in the group. And I was in a group, right? And I just saw the guys in front of me doing like this. And yeah, there was a bollard and I hit it straight. Very frustrating.
What was the rehab like for that? Because there's a couple of ways for anyone that hasn't broke their collarbone to rehab. Yeah. And I, unfortunately, have broke my collarbone 4 times. So I've experienced...
No.
Both of these ways. Yeah, first time I broke it, I was racing in France and I hit a traffic island coming off the Pyrenees at like 90 kilometers an hour. So that's why I feel like I've defeated that myth when people say, oh, you know, slow crashes are as bad as fast crashes. I'm like, they're not. Like I've crashed at 9K an hour and I've crashed at 90K an hour. Trust me, the 90K an hour is much worse.
Oh.
But you can either get your collarbone pinned or you can let it heal naturally. And the thing for most full-time riders is you get your collarbone pinned, and it's quite invasive obviously because you have to have surgery, but it means you have a lot less restrictions going forward. Did you opt to get a pin? Or
yeah, I opted for surgery. Like I did some research, and I'm very thankful for the community who's following me online, so I could just ask, hey guys, what's your experience with that? What did you opt for? And there are a lot of cyclists who have broken the collarbone. So most of them were like, yeah, I get surgery. It's better also for the long-term effects. So I had access to a lot of people's stories who were sharing their experience with me, which made me opt for surgery. And I'm really thankful that I did. Like I'm actually like a little scared of needles, but like after going through the process of having something screwed to my bone, I'm healed now. I'm afraid of nothing that has no needles or anything. And I'm really glad that I was able to recover much faster, especially as I don't like to depend on other people. So if you're not able to move half the side of your body, a lot of things in a daily life get really hard, like eating, cutting your food, cooking especially, or like getting dressed.
Well, I think it's hard when you're in a country that isn't your native country and you don't have family and that kind of old school network of friends around. My first collarbone break, I broke it in France, and I broke my collarbone, my scapula and my ribs in that same crash. And I was in the apartment in France and I was like so totally helpless. Like it's so hard. You can't go get shopping yourself. You can't get, you know, food preparation is difficult. Getting dressed is difficult. It's a whole ordeal.
Exactly. So I was really glad that I had it screwed.
Can you wear backpacks yet?
Yeah, it does feel kind of funny. But it's all right. It's all right. Like I still have huge parts around the surgery. It's still numb. I have the plate still in. You can actually like see it through my skin. And I think also in Spain, my scar is much bigger than most of the people's scars that I have seen. But yeah, I'm fine. Like I'm happy with it. And yeah, regaining the range of movement much earlier and being able to do things on my own much faster. I appreciated that. Like,
I'm almost scared at your own of these days, because last time I went out, I haven't been out probably for 7 or 8 months, but last time I went out, I intended to stay for a week and I ended up staying for 5 weeks.
That's what happened.
I just got sucked into almost back into the full-time cycling life, where I'm like waking up in the morning, get a text almost like, hey, you want to do the coastal loop, stop for a coffee. And it's like 4.5, 5 hours later, come home, I'm exhausted, have a short nap. And then you go back out for dinner and you're like, okay, well, that's the day done. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not a full-time bike rider anymore. I need to get my podcast out. I need to do some coaching work. And you just get sucked into this, that your own cadence. How have you sort of tried to carve out balance within that full-time cycling ecosystem?
Well, so I used to be somebody who has worked way too much. And especially as I'm self-employed and as I run my own business, I tend to not allow myself to take breaks. So coming to Spain and being surrounded by people who just right full time has helped me a lot to be able to actually relax a little bit more and to work less. And I really appreciate that change in my life. So it has actually turned out being super well for me and for my business. Since I'm here, I work less than I used to when I was still living in Germany. But I think I got more productive. So the actual time that I invest is super productive and I get things done. And then I go out and cycle. And I also see cycling as part of my work, as I have to keep my body fit to be able to talk about cycling and do the things that I don't do. But I love this lifestyle, which is one of the reasons that I came here. And I like the way that I do it is I go to a cafe like in the morning to do some co-working, because there are a lot of people who are self-employed living in Girona. So we do like co-working together, not to feel like, okay, everybody else is riding and I'm just here sitting in front of my laptop. So if you sit in front of your laptop with a couple of people around, it just feels less like you're wasting your life.
So are you working entirely on your own brand, or are you also working on other brands and helping them out?
Now I work entirely on my own brand. So my ex-boyfriend and I, we used to run like a content creation agency for photography and videography. And as we split up, I now focus more on my business, which is my content creation for my own profile. And it's getting more and more. So I do Instagram. I post every second day. I used to post every day. And also I'm doing YouTube. Like I do vlogs about my adventures and I have a lot of other things going on. And
YouTube's hard. I tried YouTube before podcast. I said, okay, I'm going to crack YouTube. So I was like, I'm going to put out a vlog every single day on YouTube until I crack it.
Wow.
And I started on January 1st and I think I lasted until the start of May. And I roughly got to 8,500 or so subscribers. And I was like, no, I'm done with this. This is like, no one wants to be going out for dinner with me and I'm pulling out my camera and like, oh, here's the story of the day. Cause you're on all day if you're creating YouTube content. I'm like, I can't deal with walking around with a camera all day. My life has become a parody of itself. So at that point I pivoted and I said, okay, I'm going to try 6 months of podcast and see which takes off. And I was like, thankfully the podcast took off because I couldn't take going back to YouTube. It's so, so hard. I have so much respect for people to do it.
Oh, I love YouTube. I really do, because there's more of your personality that goes into a video than into an Instagram picture. Like I love Instagram. I love the aesthetics of it. And I also work as a photographer. So photography and like editing is one of my biggest passions. And I love writing. Like actually, I always wanted to become an author. And then I ended up on this visual platform called Instagram, which is super funny. But still, I do invest some time into my captions. And every year I have a word count run on the document that I use to write them. And in fact, it's like about 70,000 words that I write per year for my Instagram captions. And this is the average word count of a book. So I'm very proud to say, I kind of feel like I fulfilled that childhood dream a little bit.
But now you have the audience, it's going to be super easy for you to pivot and bring the book out in a couple of years' time.
I don't know if anybody would read it, but yeah. back to YouTube. I really love doing it. And I think the platform itself is more valuable for a creator, as if I upload a YouTube video, it stays there forever and the video still gets views after like years. And if I post something on Instagram, I think the post is gone after a couple of days. So nobody scrolls back like years on your Instagram. So yeah, YouTube is more thankful and they also value their creators more. So as YouTube, it's not much what they pay, especially like at the beginning of your content creation on YouTube, but they do value their creators and there is some sort of payment coming in to value you for all the hours.
Yeah, I make like $100 a month off YouTube.
Wow. Oh, congratulations. That's a couple of coffees.
It's tragic.
Yeah, I also, I pay people to help me with the content creation because it's just so much. So YouTube doesn't exactly finance itself. But for me, it's an investment by now and I just love doing it. And I hope in a couple of years it will be like more successful. And then it will finance itself.
Yeah, I love it. And the same reason I love podcasts, I'm fascinated with storytelling, even the idea of how we structure stories and the story arc and the three-act narrative. And you can dive so deep into it. And it's the more you know, the less you realize you know. And you're like, oh my God, I have so much to learn about storytelling.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I love the storytelling aspect as well. Like to share your story and to actually have like a deeper connection with people. That's actually the reason why I started doing Instagram. I wanted to feel connected to people and like share stories. And I just love the way it turned out. And there's so many amazing people who reach out to me and like share their stories with me or like engage with my stories that I tell or engage with my captions. And it's very lovely. And I feel very connected in the cycling community. They are awesome people.
There's one of my favorite quotes is, I think it's Helen Keller, life is a daring adventure or nothing at all. And so much of your lifestyle and then by implication your content is about creating these amazing adventures. And, you know, looking back for the podcast, I was looking at some of your YouTube channel, which is brilliant. And it's anyone listening, definitely go check it out.
Sweet.
I'll leave the link in the show notes. But your adventure on the Camino de Santiago, tell me about that. What inspired that?
So Virginia, she's one of my best friends and she was supposed to do a stage race in Morocco. She couldn't take the flight and she actually was staying with me to do the Trucker 360. She's so badass. Like she turned out being second in the Trucker and it's like 360 kilometer gravel race. So you have to do it in one go. And she left Girona because she wanted to do the stage race in Morocco. Like one day later, after she left my flat, we stayed there together, she called me and said, actually, I can take the flight. I was like, oh no, I'm sorry. And then she said, but I want to do something else. Like I have to give myself another adventure as I can't do the stage race in Morocco. So what about doing a bikepacking? And I was like, yeah, I'm in. And then I asked her, when are you planning to do it? And she said, tomorrow. So yeah, I was like, okay, so I'm packing my bags and I travel towards your direction and then we can start the bikepacking together. So it was very, very spontaneous. Like we had basically like no planning going into it. We hadn't even figured out the route 100%. So we basically met and just started and stopped wherever we wanted to stop and tried to cover like about 140 kilometers per day of gravel. So it was quite ambitious, especially with a lot of heat and no shade that's on the track. And it also is a lot of technical gravel. So they're actually like quite big rocks. So in some sections, the maximum speed that you can go is like 18, 19 kilometer per hour. And yeah, having Virginia joining the adventure with me or me joining her on that adventure was super cool because we're both content creators. So we can create the content on bike without stopping. So we can film each other and photograph each other as we both have like a similar job. She, on top of that, also is a professional mountain bike racer.
That's amazing. That makes it very doable because it's difficult to film yourself as you're moving and, you know, you're cycling ahead and trying to set up a tripod and then cycling past it. And I guess it's super frustrating for someone you're with if they're a non-content creator and you're trying to create content around a trip like this.
Exactly. And also that way the content is so authentic as we just capture moments and don't have to like fake situations. If we both just do our thing and if we see something that we like take a photo or like record a quick video of it. And it was just super fun because I felt that I can live the adventure more and focus less on the content creation. Because in fact, you got to do two jobs. It's doing the adventure and being able to cover the distance, like get through the day on your bike. And then on top of that, also create the content. So yeah, Virginia and I, we make a really good team and there are a lot of upcoming bike picking projects with her. And we've done a couple of things together after that as well. And I think if you partner up with somebody for such an adventure, especially if it's like a hard trek or if you're going to be exhausted, you tend to at some point be annoyed or maybe like be angry with each other, or like the vibes change on such a trip. You're going through so many different stages of emotions, and we're just such a good team. Like, we never really got annoyed at each other, it was just love for the whole trip. And we're such a good team that we decided after the trip to do like a little bit of van life. Virginia has a camper van, so she took me to the coast with her. It was very funny because all I had with me was the things that I had in my bike packing bag. So I had like one set of trousers, two pair of socks, a t-shirt, and some slippers that broke. So yeah, I didn't even have shoes or anything. And we still managed to live in a van together for like about 4 weeks. And I was just using all of her clothing, and I was running around in her shoes that are so four sizes too big. And it was just very, very funny. And
this is the bike packing trade-off that people don't see. It's like you're trying to figure out how to bring all the clothes you need and bring all the supplies you need. But you also have to figure out how to cram all that stuff into a pretty small space, because you need to carry it up climbs, across rocks, maybe lifting your bike over gates and things like this. Do you have like a system for figuring out, you're a bike packing veteran at this stage, you've done loads of these bike packing trips, like what's the essentials you bring with you on every bike packing trip versus the stuff that's like dependent?
The less the better. So I really I try to wash my clothing. Like, if you have access to a washing machine or like a sink, you just wash your stuff in a sink. That means you save the space for a couple of other things. So I usually take like some cycling kit with me that I'm gonna wash. Then I have like all my camera equipment that I need for the content creation, and some spare batteries, like all the cables and stuff. Plus I carry like some Birkenstock or like slippers with me. And another bike packing essential that you don't need at the moment, as it's like close to 40 degrees, it's like a puffer jacket. So I think a puffer jacket comes in handy, because sometimes it can get like super cold in the night, and you never know. And it also doesn't take up much space. I also take a little bit of food with me, but mostly on all the bike packing projects that I've done so far, I had access to Civilization, and I could go to a supermarket and stock up there. So I saved the space or the weight to climb up the hill faster. And also the supermarket menu is pretty delicious.
And are you a good mechanic? Do you bring tools with you to fix mechanicals along the way? Or are you just like full damsel in distress if you break down?
Oh my God, no, you need the tools. Like if you puncture, or if like anything else happens to your bike, I really try to fix it on my own. And if you do bike picking trips with somebody else, you can actually share your luggage. So you can, like one of you guys could bring toothpaste and the other one brings a tool, because you can share all these tools. And you don't need two tools on a bike picking trip if you're with two people. So I do bring all the tools, or my friend brings all the tools and I bring something else in return. Because the sense of freedom that you get on a bike picking trip, I think it's important to maintain through being able to solve problems. Because on most of the bike picking trips, there are some sort of kind of problems, and you got to improvise and fix them, which is also why I love it so much.
And do you worry about safety concerns? You know, I'm not talking like safety, like Imogen getting hit by a car, more like two females traveling on their own. Is that ever a concern for you, or has it come up in the past?
Actually, I don't worry too much about this, because the countries that we've traveled to, it's mostly been European countries. So I think there's no problem with traveling alone if you're two women. I mean, we're not sleeping in tents. So we had like Airbnbs or like some hostels and stuff that we booked. So I actually preferred on some of the trips to sleep in hostels, because I felt it was safer. But I'd also be down to sleeping in a tent. And I think there's less to worry about when you're sleeping in the forest than like being in a city. I think being in a city is much more dangerous than just sleeping in a forest, if there are no like dangerous animals around.
Like wolves.
I don't know, like snakes, bears.
I've had Sven Tuft on the podcast. Sven, world tour rider for like 10 years. He's worn the leader's jersey in the Giro d'Italia and stuff. But Sven used to tow his dog on a trailer to race. So he'd ride all across Canada and he'd tow his dog behind him, and then he'd wild camp every night. And he's got some crazy stories about like wolves attacking him in the middle of the night and him and his dog having to fight the wolves. And he's the most hardcore man in the world. Like, you listen to these stories and you're like, oh my God, that is total insanity. But he's one of my favorite guys to talk to.
Exciting adventures. It sounds like a proper adventure to me. Yeah. But you're right. I think that it
sounds like a YouTube video that's going to blow up to a million views, fighting wolves in the forest.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I'd be scared. I think there is a difference if you're traveling as a female or as male. And I think you're more endangered as a female. But I don't want to let this limit me in my dreams and the adventures that I want to do in the future.
So just finishing up, how important is balance for you? Because I see you mentioned you went surfing trip straight after bikepacking. And I know, for me, I'm a real big fan of contrast. And one of the running themes on this podcast is this idea of contrast. It's okay to embrace going out riding your bike in really shit weather, because that means when you come home and you're snuggled up by the fire in your pajamas, that experience somehow seems different than if you didn't go riding that morning. But I also think, to extend that analogy, it's important to take time where we step away from the bike and do other activities like surfing, skateboarding, swimming. So when we do come back to cycling, it does feel like a more enlivened, enriched experience. Has that something you've always had, that balance in your relationship with cycling, or are you new to this?
I freaking love cycling so much. Like, it's such a huge part of who I am and of my cultural identity. And I never really struggled a lot to motivate myself to jump on my bike, but I do appreciate doing other sports as well, because I mostly skip the core training. And I need to make it a fun activity for me to do core training. So I think that surfing can do that for me, or like skating can do that for me. And also I can see that skating gives me a really good feeling for the tarmac below me, or like for the gravel ground below me. And I think my bike skills actually benefit from that. And also from the muscles that I get from surfing. Like, I'm at the beginning of my surf journey. I still see paddling as one of my biggest challenges, as I don't really train my arms much.
Surfing's so hard. Like,
even
as you get a little bit better, like if you take, like, I haven't gone surfing in probably a year now, and you're basically back to being a total beginner again if you take that much time off.
Yeah, it's not like most people expect. You just get a board, you jump on it, you're able to ride a wave. There's so many different factors that come into it. Like, you have to learn so many. It's quite technical as well, and you have to have the right timing. So cycling is much easier than surfing is, and it can be really frustrating, especially at the beginning. So you be like, you get like the typical wave slap. You're being like thrown in the sand from some giant wave, and you try to get back to the lineup again, but then like some other waves come and they throw you back, and it can be a little bit mental. You gotta be like,
a surfboard hits you in the head, you're feeling concussed and you're swallowing water.
One day I actually returned from a surf trip with like a giant bruise here over my eye, because a surfboard had hit me in my face. Yeah, so you're in danger of hurting yourself if you do other sports as well. But yeah, I happily take the risk. I've sprained my ankle on a skateboard already and all that stuff. And my ankle had a shade. It had a shadow. It was so fat. But yeah, I do enjoy having some other sports as well.
We're talking about my YouTube journey.
Yeah.
I had on the skateboard, and I had, it was like more of a longboard than a skateboard, and I think I was going to a bike race, and I had the skateboard out and I was skating to the race, and I had my camera out and I was vlogging, and I obviously was looking at the camera and not where I was going, and I hit like a stick or something in the road or a log. And I went like straight over, but I was going fast. I was like slightly downhill as I was doing this, but it looked so bad that a car pulled in and an old lady asked me if I needed them to call an ambulance. But like, smashed my camera to pieces. Like, it was traumatic, but it was so embarrassed that like I hit the ground and I like just jumped up and I sat on a wall and just kind of pretended I was waiting for somebody. But like, cameras broke to shit, blood's coming out everywhere. I'm like, oh my God, that was embarrassing.
But did it actually record the crash?
I recorded the crash, yeah. Never seen air though.
I've got to check it out. I have so many skateboard crashes recorded that I've done recently. It's very funny because I'm also at the beginning of my skateboard career, so to say. Yeah, it's the most funny crash, I think.
Alina, I'm going to drop links to your YouTube channel, links to your Instagram and all the other stuff you're up to in today's show notes. But thank you for joining me on the podcast.
It was a lot of fun. I hope I didn't talk too much and that your editor is not going to hate me for my loud laugh.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Have you ever wondered how good you could actually be? Each of us has a unique set of circumstances with work, family, and social obligations, but we also want to fulfill our potential in cycling. Okay, maybe you won't ever win the Tour de France, but for most of us, this is what cycling is about. So let us build you the perfect training plan around your lifestyle that's totally unique to you and will help you finally realize your cycling dreams. So whether you're just getting started on the bike or if you're a more seasoned cyclist, we have a suitable coach for you. So why not schedule a call with us and we can have a chat about how we can help you go further than you ever dreamed of in your cycling and fitness goals. Go to roadmancycling.com/contact or pop me an email directly to sarah@roadmancycling.com.